and welcome to Philosophy of X here on the Aspect Network. I am your host, Alex Batts, and I'll be your guide as we take a journey to examine the world of X-Men through philosophy. As you can tell by the title of this episode, we're taking a little break from our regularly scheduled programming. In truth, the next episode, which will be covering Magneto and the ethics of mutant liberation, needs a little bit longer in the oven, because it's important to me that a topic of that magnitude be done the justice that it deserves, and the research for it has become a little bit more extensive. That said, I didn't want to take an entire week off, and luckily for us, we've got the perfect solution as some brand new, exciting X-Men content dropped this morning. X-Men 97, the revival series for the beloved X-Men the Animated Series, dropped its two-episode premiere this morning, so I'll be diving in with my reactions. This episode will be a little bit looser than typical Pox episodes, which also, I'm going to start referring to this show as Pox, by the way. It's not a coincidence that I made it possible for that to be the abbreviation, but this episode will be a little bit more off the cuff than standard episodes. I do have notes and a script, but I also want to allow myself some room for tangents and raw reactions. I'll keep the bulk of this episode spoiler-free, with a small section at the end for some spoiler-filled thoughts. All of that said, let's dive into the two-part premiere with the episodes To Me, My X-Men, and Mutant Liberation Begins. So, X-Men the Animated Series debuted in October of 1992 and ran for five seasons, ending in September of 1997. I'll go ahead and date myself out of the gate here. I was born in October of 96, so I did not get to watch this as it initially aired, but similar to Batman the Animated Series, I did grow up catching reruns. Like many 90s kids, it was impossible for me to not get hyped when this revival series was announced. And now we're finally at the premiere. Some quick housekeeping to get out of the way first. This revival series was spearheaded by Beau DeMaio, who actually isn't with the show anymore, but we're not getting into that drama here. The first two episodes were written by DeMaio, with the first episode being directed by Jake Castorana and the second directed by Chase Conley. The voice cast includes Ray Chase as Scott Summers, Jennifer Hale as Jean Grey, Allison Seeley Smith as Storm, Cal Dodd as Wolverine, J.P. Karliak as Morph, Lenore Zahn as Rogue, George Buza as Beast, Holly Chu as Jubilee, Matthew Watterson as Magneto, and Adrian Hugh as Nightcrawler, rounding out the main cast. And apologies for any mispronunciations there. I promise I'm trying my hardest, but names can be difficult. With all of that housekeeping done, let's dive into these episodes. First off, it's impossible to not get unbelievably hyped when that intro music hits. The main theme for this podcast is heavily inspired by it, and for good reason. It's iconic. There's just no other way to put it. I started tearing up hearing that music and seeing the new intro. It was just perfect. And then the show maintains that energy throughout its entire runtime. Which leads me into the first main thing that I want to address. These are roughly 30-minute episodes, 32 minutes, but each is closer to 26 to 28 if you account for the credits and the intro and whatnot, but they pack so much in there, and I don't mean that as a negative either. It is beyond impressive how much story they're able to fit in these first two episodes without it feeling cramped or rushed. I've got to be honest, I have not watched the original series in forever. I vaguely remember the events of it, but this show makes sure that it has your back. It picks up narratively exactly where the original series ended, albeit with a time jump, and fills the audience in with everything they need to know. And it moves. It keeps a stellar pace throughout the first episode and maintains that through the second. It establishes the team, their dynamics with each other, and where everyone is at in their own personal journey. It's some really great stuff. This leads me to my second main point. It nails these characters. It does something really, really smart in that it takes place in 97, but it makes use of all of the character work that has been done in the comics since the original show finished airing. Magneto, in particular, benefits greatly from this, but really everyone gets a chance to shine. These feel like wonderful distillations of who these characters are. Everyone gets some moments in the spotlight, and the show treats them with the respect that they deserve. It does all of this while also being a genuinely exciting cartoon. And before I get too deep into more story stuff, because there's another major point that I want to make in that regard that isn't spoiler-filled, I've got to talk about the animation for a second. This show is gorgeous. It's a looker, and the action is crazy cool. I lost track of the amount of times that my jaw dropped. When the action escalates and that main theme hits, there's just nothing else like it. Fantastic character designs, awesome action, and making use of the idea of mutant circuits, again, a concept that's been elevated in recent years, is incredible to see. The blend of 2D and 3D animation is honestly seamless. I know that a lot of people before release were iffy on how some of it looked. I was partly in that camp, but rest assured that in motion, this final product is amazing. And again, the action is just so cool. I really can't emphasize enough how fun and exciting the show is and just how cool it is to see the X-Men doing their thing in battle and the music behind them. It's awesome. It's so good. So back to the story stuff, and specifically the 90s. The show is taking a lot from past X-Men stories and injecting it here. I won't cover all the plot beats, but I can think of at least 5 to 6 major X-Men events that they lay the groundwork for here. It's borderline too much, but it somehow works. I'm really curious about how far out they've mapped the possible series and whether they have internal green lights for a second and possible third season, because they're working with a lot. That said, it does an excellent job of executing story and character beats in the now. There is admittedly a weird balance of politics going on here too. I'm going to bring up Krakoa because it's too ingrained in how I now view the X-Men not to. Krakoa redefined what the X-Men can be, and so it is a bit odd to see something set so far behind that political progress they made there, but in the context of this show, it makes perfect sense. Krakoa doesn't work without all the stories from the 90s and 2000s, and this show is now barreling through those stories. That said, it is injecting some solid political commentary that's more fitting of the progress that Mutant has made in the now. It's an interesting tightrope to walk, and I'm curious to see how it plays out as the show progresses. Again, it's one of the things that benefits from taking character and universe growth in the decades since the original show aired, and retrofitting it to where this story takes place timeline-wise. If you're familiar with X-Men lore, there are so many Leo pointing at the TV moments in recognition, and it's an awesome experience. If you aren't familiar with X-Men lore, you are in for a wild ride. I think that basically sums up my non-spoilery thoughts for the show. Killer pacing that runs through a lot of iconic stuff while paying it justice, nails the characters, amazing action, set pieces, stellar animation, and of course that theme. So we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'll dive into some very quick spoiler-filled thoughts.
Hi, my name is Nagin.
And I'm Bree. Enjoying this show on the Aspect Network?
Then check out Viltrumikes, an Invincible podcast.
Each week, we go back and discuss your favorite episodes of the series and review new episodes as they release right on Amazon Prime.
Join us as we travel space, time, and the multiverse with Mark Grayson and discuss one of the most exciting superhero series on TV on Viltrumikes, here on the Aspect Network.
And now, back to the show.
Welcome back. So for this, I've just got some bullet points that I want to touch on, and I'll ramble about each a little bit, and then we'll wrap things up. So the first one is Baby Nathan. So Jean starts the series pregnant, and I was thinking about this, and I was like, oh, well, obviously it makes the most sense for this to be Nathan. It would be wild if it were Rachel or Hope. It's not. It is indeed Nathan. He's born in the second episode and they name him. And my only thought with him is that he's got to go bye-bye soon. Like, he has to go away. Nathan is not raised in the present. He's raised in the future. So obviously that'll happen. And that'll be interesting to see. I'm really curious to see how exactly they tackle that and how soon that happens. So that's the main thing with the whole Nathan situation. The other thing that dovetails into this a lot is Madeline Pryor, I'm like 99% sure, shows up at the end of the second episode. Or also conversely, I think that the Jean that we're with for the first two episodes might be Madeline Pryor, and that who we see at the end of the second episode might be Jean. I was talking with a friend while I was watching these episodes, and I was like, I've got money that this is not actually Jean. And then I got to the end of the second episode, and I was like, oh, I told you, one of them is Maddie. So I think that for sure, one of them is Madeline Pryor. I think especially that coupled with the kind of weird vision that Jean has in the first episode when she's using Cerebro and all the stuff that goes on there definitely dovetails well with the Madeline Pryor storyline and all of that. So I'm really curious to see how they tackle those things and those major plot points, because it's a really big deal in X-Men history, and especially for the Summers family and how Jean and Scott and of course Madeline all evolve as characters and their places in the X-Men lore. So I'm just excited that they really are bringing in Madeline Pryor so early. It looks that way, at least. My friend thinks he thinks that it might be Mystique. I really doubt that it's Mystique. I don't think that they'll do that. It's possible, I guess, but I give it like a less than 5% chance that that's Mystique at the end there. I think that's definitely Maddie, because they also, they bring up the Phoenix and the blue side of the moon and stuff like that in the first episode, or maybe the second. One of the two episodes, they bring that stuff up, and I definitely think that it's not a coincidence there that they're reminding the audience of the Phoenix stuff. And for those in the know about the X-Men lore and how Phoenix and Madeline Pryor and Jean are all involved, it's, you know, pretty integral stuff there. So Madeline Pryor is wild to see already, but very hype. The next thing, the next bullet point that I've got here is Storm being depowered. So I can't remember why or how I'd seen talk about Storm being sidelined for a good chunk of this season before the season had aired. I think it was because of the episode titles, because what the episode titles as the season goes on are and how those line up with events in X-Men history. And so we saw it coming, or at least those who are familiar with the stories were able to kind of predict that Storm would go through losing her powers. And that is what happens in the second episode. And while that is a bummer, because in the first episode, it was amazing to see her as the Omega level mutant that she is, it makes sense to have to take that off the board narratively. It's actually funny. I was listening to a podcast earlier with Kieran Gillen, who's a writer, and he was talking about the fact that you can't really have, like in modern comics now, you can't really have the Omega level mutants fight each other, because it's kind of nothing. And not that it's nothing, but it's, you can't really do anything with it, because the whole point of them being Omega level is that there's no upper limit to their powers. And so there's not a lot of interesting stuff narratively to do there. So it makes sense that they're taking Storm off the board in that way. And it also makes sense because Storm's depowered era in the comics is one of the biggest character growth things for her. And they also do establish the Morlocks and Callisto in the first episode, who Callisto is very integral to Storm's character growth while she's depowered. So nice setting up of things there, and was again on one of those point of the TV, I know what they're doing here moments. So that's cool. Bummer to see Storm without powers for most of the season, presumably, but also does make sense from a growth perspective. So there's that. The other thing, obviously, we're getting Magneto as the headmaster of the school, which is awesome. That's another huge character growth moment in his history, is him taking that role because Xavier left it for him. And there's a lot of super, super interesting stuff to be done there with Magneto really turning from this villain and this adversary for the X-Men into what he really is now in the comics, in that he is an ally for them. He's not a villain that they're constantly fighting. And so it's really, it makes sense for them to want to tackle this story and to go through this story and through that route. And it just, I mean, even in the first two episodes, really the second one, because he just comes in at the end of the first one, there's already so much interesting stuff going on there in the team's reaction to him and the world's reaction to him and their reaction to his turn of character and him being a positive force for mutantdom and things like that. And so I'm so excited to see this play out. Also, his outfit is awesome. It's one of the best looks for the character. And so that makes a lot of sense and is of course exciting to see. Quick couple things. I mentioned the visions that Jean had in the first episode, Plants of Sinister. This also goes into the Madeline Pryor of it all, but definitely some nods to Mr. Sinister and stuff. So he's going to be showing up. I think we also have in the official cast list that someone is going to be voicing him. So we know that he'll be around, which again dovetails into all the Madeline Pryor of it all. and things like that. So Sinister is going to be interesting to see later down the line. Executioner's Song is something they're riffing off of in the second episode that we see that's cool. And then the other main thing is it melds in with Magneto, but also Xavier's possible return, and also one of the most out there concepts in the X-Men, which is Cassandra Nova. So her relation comes in to Magneto and Xavier, and the fact that we know Genosha is a thing here that they're going to be emphasizing as we go through the season, and the way that Genosha ends with Cassandra Nova's involvement, and then also presumably the return of Charles Xavier, is some really fascinating stuff. And so I think they're setting up Genosha to then eventually take Genosha off the map, literally, with what Cassandra Nova is going to do. So that's all a bunch of interesting stuff. Those are, a lot of this is pretty, I'm leaving it kind of vague, I guess. If you're listening to this, obviously, I assume that you've watched the two episodes. However, a lot of this stuff I don't want to get into too in the weeds as far as X-Men lore stuff. If you know, then you know. If you don't, Google it or read the stories. And if not, I'm leaving it kind of vague. That way you can be like, all right, I guess I see part of where this is going, but I'm not entirely sure. Those are my quick spoiler thoughts and just observations as someone who is familiar with a lot of these stories. I, granted, have not read all of these stories that they're pulling from, they're referencing, but I do have a pretty solid working understanding of a lot of the stuff. So I'm super excited for where this is going. Like I said at the beginning, or like halfway through, they're putting down a lot of plot threads for this that is very exciting to see. And I can't believe how good the show was. I mean, not that I can't believe it, but it just is so refreshing that it met and exceeded the expectations that I have for it. And I love the X-Men so much. They're so cool. Seeing all the hype around the show is great. LeBron James was tweeting about it earlier, which is wild. And yeah, I think those are pretty much my spoiler thoughts. So with that, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Philosophy of X. Again, be sure to bring your metal detectors next week. Like I talked about earlier, we'll be covering the Master of Magnetism, Magneto. But until then, you can find me online at AP Batman with two T's. And then, of course, please be sure to subscribe here to The Aspect on YouTube and any platform where podcasts can be found. Please give us a like, drop a comment, turn on that notification bell so you never miss an episode. And also share this with your friends if you enjoyed this episode. Get it out there into the world. Let everyone know, what did you think of the X-Men 97 two-part premiere if you watched? If you didn't, it's kind of weird that you got through this entire podcast and haven't watched. Go watch it. It's awesome. But yeah, you can also follow us on Twitter/X, Instagram, and TikTok at The Aspect Co. Once again, thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.